At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, Buck fans, I'm Gary D'Amato, sports columnist at the Journal Sentinel, JS Online, with Matt Velasquez, who's on a road trip with, or will soon be leaving on a four-game road trip with the Bucks. Matt, it's been a long time. I was in South Korea for a long time, had knee surgery. You've been plugging away on the Bucks, doing a great job. It's been a long time since we talked, so I'm looking forward to doing this podcast.
Yeah, it's always great to be talking with you here, Gary. It was nice to see you yesterday, Sunday, when the Bucks played the Spurs. You were in another game before that too. But you know, it's been nice to have you back since you went down to the Olympics. Any before we get started with anything else, any Olympic stories you want to share with our listeners?
Well, you know, I was at the gold medal game for Canada U.S. hockey, and I got to say, Matt, of all the things I've covered, doing this almost 40 years now, and doing 11 Olympic games. That might have been in my top five most exciting things I've ever covered. People don't pay attention to women's hockey for, you know, 3 years and 11 months. And then the Olympics roll around and it's a pretty big deal. And, you know, the Americans, won the first gold medal in women's hockey in 1998, but it's been Canada ever since. And then for the U.S. to win that game in a shootout, in overtime, it was just, the atmosphere was fantastic. And, it was, you know, I don't get excited at too much anymore. Haven't done this for a long time, but I was genuinely excited to be at that game. It was a cool thing to see. It really was.
That's awesome. Any travel, issues? I know sometimes that's been a thing that follows you all the time.
I had a very minor one, and I'll tell you real quickly. On my way home, I flew from Seoul to Atlanta on the way home, and it was a big wide body and, you know, 300 some people on it, and I just didn't want to stand in line forever, so I just sat in my chair and watched all the people get on the plane, and I jumped up at the last minute. I was like the last guy to get on the plane, and you know, I gave him my boarding pass, and you know, sure enough, it alarmed, and they said, well, you can't get on this flight, you've got a battery in your checked baggage. And I'm thinking, no, I don't have a battery in my checked baggage. And I go, are you sure? I said was it a camera battery? And they said, no, it's some other lithium battery, and you got to go down to this down the concourse and go to security and get cleared, and we're going to hold the plane for you. So here I am with a bad knee. You know, I had surgery March 9th, but I was limping around in Korea. I'm literally running down this concourse to get to security, and I found out my wife, thank you Didi, had packed a phone charger in my suitcase, and I didn't even know it. And so that's what it was. And then I'm running back to catch the plane, and I see Tony Granato, the men's hockey coach. And so I stop and talk to him for a minute. I literally got to the plane. The flight attendants were in the doorway, like getting ready to close the door. So I just barely made it back onto the plane. But compared to some other things I've gone through, that was nothing.
I mean, you didn't stop any war-torn countries, so I mean, that's fine. It's not like the last Winter Olympics.
No, exactly.
You know, but so I'm hoping that, you know, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. I'll be heading out to L.A. Monday night. I hope that I have nothing interesting happen to me, because as you know, the best flights are the ones where nothing interesting happens. You know,
exactly.
And I think there might be a few interesting things happening with the Bucks on the West Coast at the very least. You like that segue there? You know, as we...
Very good.
As they look to kind of figure out how high they can go into the playoff standings, and you know what these games are going to look like, especially with all the injury questions that are surrounding them and the Warriors, especially, and a whole bunch of things. But I guess we can start before we even get out there by talking about the game Sunday against the Spurs. You and I were both there. We had our esteemed colleague Ben Steele there as well, so we were rolling pretty deep with the Journal Sentinel crew.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, that was I did some looking, and that's probably the most impressive game the Bucks have played, maybe since their win over Oklahoma City months ago. I mean,
yeah.
And you'd have to say that that's up there, right?
Definitely, and you know, I flip flop my, you know, although I haven't been to a lot of games, you know, for the last 4, 5, 6 weeks because I was out of the country for 3 weeks. But I have watched them a lot on TV, except for, you know, that 20-day period. I missed maybe 5 games. And I'll tell you, I'm constantly changing my opinion of this team. And this is one of those games where I'm thinking, you know, they could be a scary team to play in the playoffs if they play the way they brought it against the Spurs. Sometimes I think they're dead, and the Spurs game reminded me how much talent that team has.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that the Spurs weren't, you know, they're not a huge 3-point shooting team. The teams that normally, you know, give them problems. But you just watch the Bucks on Sunday, and just the way that they were, you know, working in sync and working hard defensively from the start, and they were turning, you know, they're forcing the Spurs into tough shots. Obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge is a great player. He's on a great run. But in that first quarter, you know, he had a bunch of, you know, turnaround fadeaways, which are shots that he can definitely make. But you're going to live with those, you know, because all you can do is defend those as best as possible and hope that he misses, as opposed to giving him easy layups or open set shots, you know, things like that. You don't want to give that. If you can force him into a more difficult shot as well as he takes them, you know, then you kind of live with it. And they took those misses from Aldridge and from everybody else. You know, Spurs started the game like 1 of 8 from the field. And they immediately went out to run. Like, no matter what, there was always someone leaking out, always someone trying to push the pace. And they were like, getting ahead of the Spurs as often as possible. It wasn't always leading to points, but it was just setting this tone of, hey, if you're going to miss, we are going to attack you at every opportunity. And that's when the Bucks are going to be at their best. I mean, that's when most teams are at their best, if you can get teams in a situation where their defense isn't set and you can kind of dictate where the ball is going to move, how it's going to move, and who's going to get an open shot, because someone will. It's just a function of finding that person and getting it to them at the right time. And so, so for starting like that, you know, and being able to not only get those defensive stops, but to turn them into, you know, offensive opportunities where, you know, you get the defense on their heels, we haven't seen that. I mean, the Bucks have been a really slow starting team of late. I think in 4 of the 5 games before that, they'd gotten out to double-digit deficits at some point in the first quarter. And whether it was the starters doing it or when a couple of bench guys came in, at some point they were sluggish. They were, you know, not really figuring it out offensively. They weren't getting stops. They weren't getting their hands up on defense all the time. We're just showing that level of urgency that was necessary. You know, and it was especially a problem against teams with, you know, worse records, because they were like, well, we can kind of just take these guys. And NBA teams are good when you let them shoot open shots. And so then they ran into trouble more often than not. So like, it was definitely encouraging you know, to watch them and say, okay, this is who they can be. This is the team that everyone's scared of. This is the idea of this team that we haven't seen in very long.
Right. Yeah. If I'm Toronto or Boston, one of the, or, you know, Cleveland, one of the top seeds in the East, and I look at film of that game, I'm saying, you know, it might not be a lot of fun playing these guys in the first round of the playoffs. But you know what? You know, you talked about them coming out flat, which we've talked about in previous podcasts. The players have talked about, the coaches have talked about, you've written about it. They can't, I mean, they're number, are hanging on barely to the number 7 spot right now in the seedings, and they can't be flat in any more games. I mean, I think this stretch of games coming up here is so crucial to show what they're about, because they cannot come out and play flat unless they don't mind being an 8 seed and, you know, facing the number 1 seed in the first round of the playoffs. But if they want to hold on to that 7 seed or even maybe move up to 6, they can't do what we've talked about, what they've done so many times this season. Don't you agree?
For sure. You know, I asked John Henson the other day, I was like, you know, John, you guys always say, you know, we need to play with urgency. All these games matter. Like, this is really important. This is a critical stretch for us. And it's not just him, but everybody, the whole team saying it. It's like, how does this keep happening? Like, how do you guys, knowing how important this is, you know, how do you let this keep happening? How can this still be an issue at this point in the season with guys who have played together before, with guys who have, you know, they have some level of chemistry. They're still working on, you know, fitting in the pieces with Bledsoe and Jabari coming back and Brogdon still being hurt and Dele still being hurt and all that kind of stuff. But still, like, you have vets, you have guys who have been there before, you have teammates who have played together before, and everyone knows this is an incredibly important stretch, and yet you don't see that in their body language or the way they're playing, you know, save for the San Antonio game. You know, and even he couldn't answer it. He was like, that's a good question. Like, we just gotta figure it out. We gotta go play.
We just gotta do it.
Yeah. It's like we gotta go play angry on Friday. This was before the Bulls game. They didn't do that. They got out to like a 15-4 deficit, and they slowly chipped away and eventually took over. And the Bulls weren't playing all their guys, and you know, it just kind of went how you might expect it to go. And granted, the Bucks didn't have Giannis for that game, and they eventually got 70 points from their bench, which was, you know, positive for them to see, but. You know, it still wasn't the same type of energy and kind of wire-to-wire high-level play. And obviously there are going to be, like, you know, certain small lulls during games. Every team has them. But the problem for the Bucks is they've had big ones. You know, they give up the 15-point run or the, you know, the 12-point run or whatever it is. And that totally throws off everything. And then they start having to dig out from, you know, a double-digit deficit, which they've done in the majority of the games they've played this season. But as you mentioned, you know, the playoff standings, I mean, as it stands right now, you mentioned the Bucks are a half game ahead of the Heat, and they're one game behind the Washington Wizards for sixth, you know, which is a decent spot to be. But when you look at the rest of the schedules for the rest, you know, for the rest of the season, you know, the Heat have the second easiest schedule remaining, strength of schedule, in the Eastern Conference. You know, so that bodes well for them being able to, you know, win, you know, five or six of their remaining eight games.
Right.
You know, the Wizards have an easier schedule than the Bucks do. The Bucks don't have, you know, maybe the hardest schedule. They definitely have the hardest schedule. That belongs to the Pacers. But they do have a tougher schedule than the teams around them in the standings. And, you know, to kind of compound the challenge, the Bucks will lose. If they tie with the Wizards, they lose that tiebreaker. Because of their conference game against conference teams. Obviously, that could change going forward, but currently, they're losing that tiebreaker. If they tie with the Heat, they lose that tiebreaker by virtue of losing all three games of the Heat this season. And if they tie with both the Wizards and the Heat, they lose that tiebreaker too, because of their collective record against those two teams would be third when looking at all of them, how they match up against each other. So, you know, the Bucks aren't in a position to tie with anyone. They need to kind of win outright if they want a higher spot in the standings. They have to be ahead of those teams while having a tougher schedule than both of them and having to take, you know, four games in a row on the West Coast now, six of their final nine games away from home. So it's definitely going to be an uphill climb. They can't afford to really have a letdown in any game. Obviously, they're not going to go... Well, I can't say obviously, but very likely they're not going to go 9-0. This team can really do anything at any point. And you know that they, and the way they've been up and down, almost nothing would surprise me at this point. 9-0, 0-9, whatever. But you know, they need to play with urgency and be in games and give themselves chances to win and not shoot themselves in the foot and not dig themselves into the holes they've dug all season. And that's something that they showed that they definitely can do it. They did it on Sunday against the Spurs. They played well from the start. They, you know, they had a little bit of a lull in the second quarter, where the Spurs brought up this zone and, it wasn't something they were used to and they struggled a little bit. Mostly in their opinions, they struggled knocking down shots. They got open shots. They just couldn't make them. They were, I believe, 0-8 on threes in that quarter and then they finished at 1-10. So that, you know, and then the third quarter they went on a big run and it was their game for the rest of the day. So they're going to need to emulate that game as much as possible as they head out onto this West Coast road trip. And if they can, you know, steal a couple games and have a winning road trip, that would be huge in their quest to kind of get a higher playoff spot and possibly save their first round pick. Because if they're, you know, as I wrote a little while ago, if they're seventh or eighth in the Eastern Conference when the season is over, they will lose their first round pick. It will convey to the Phoenix Suns as part of the Eric Bledsoe trade. If they're sixth, they will get to keep that first round pick, and the pick will then be moved to next year with its own protections for next year, depending on how they finish, with the possibility of it being pushed back further, depending on how things go.
Yeah, but is that something the players even know about or think about? And do they know about the all the ramifications of the draft by where they stand in the playoff seedings? I wouldn't think that, you know, they've probably been told about it, but I mean, I wouldn't think that'd be first and foremost in their minds, would it be?
I don't think so. I mean, all they care about is winning games and trying to get higher in the standings. You know, that's
right.
as a player, that's always what you want to do. You always want to win. You always want to get higher in the standings. You want to be better. Give yourself a better chance at possibly getting out of the first round. You know, and it's debatable too. I mean, you could say, well, maybe seventh is the best spot for them to be in. You know, the Raptors. You don't want to be eighth. You don't want to play the Raptors. They've been
right.
The best team in the East all year. It's dangerous to be sixth, because then you've got LeBron in the first round, and he just doesn't lose in the first round. He barely loses games in the first round. So you don't want any part
right.
of that. But seventh, you know, Boston, they've had a bunch of, you know, injuries recently. Marcus Smart, Daniel Tice, Kyrie Irving is on the shelf right now. It's like, okay, well, maybe they're vulnerable. Maybe that's a team you can do something with. You know, and I don't think the Bucks are in any position where they can, you know, try and play the schedule and try and position themselves. They just need to win games. You know, they need to get to that point where maybe in the last game of the season they could say, oh, well, if this happens, then this. And how do we want to go? And, you know, I've talked about with other people before, it would be fascinating if in the last game of the season they had a chance to win and move up to sixth by virtue of a win and probably get the Cavaliers. Or, which, you know, it also could be against the Philadelphia 76ers, too, considering that they have the easiest schedule in the East and they've been playing really well. But, you know, if there's a chance to move up to sixth and play the Cavs, do you do that and keep your pick? Or do you say, ooh, if we lose, we'll be seventh and we'll play the Celtics, which might give us a better chance to win, but we're going to lose our pick for this year. So that becomes really interesting, because obviously that would come down to probably a management and coaching decision. Depending on which players would play and how they would kind of approach the game, you know, but that's kind of down the line. We might, you know, be able to tackle that later. I'm totally interested to see what could happen in that situation, because there's a whole bunch of moving parts and things that would affect the future of this team, all based on that situation, if the Bucks can get to that point before the end of the season.
And they play Philly in the last game of the season to compound everything, right?
Oh, yeah, for
that's
sure.
And you
wonder how much Philly's going to be interested in winning that game. You know, maybe they'll have had their seed locked up and they want to rest guys like Embiid and Simmons and all those guys, you know, to head into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their seed won't be wrapped up, and maybe they'll have a chance to move up to, you know, to the four or the three, depending on where they are. They might have a chance to move up and do something interesting to, you know, affect their seeding and where they want to be. You know, if you can be Philly and try and get to the three and avoid Cleveland for two rounds, then maybe you do that, you know, and you bring all your guys, and maybe they just don't care. Maybe that's, you know, they've done enough. They've already clinched the playoff spot and they're happy with that, and they just want to be there. They're not worried about the matchups, and they just want their guys as healthy as possible. The chess match that could happen in that game could be really interesting, but like I said, it all depends on the Bucks, especially taking care of business now, beginning with this West Coast road trip.
I want one more point about the, you know, just to get back to it for one minute about the lapses, about coming out flat, about how it's happened again and again. You know the locker room a lot better than I do, Matt. Is it because they don't have a strong leader who's going to kick guys in the butt? Or do they have that guy and they're just, that's happening anyway? I gotta believe, I mean, obviously there's been very few players like Michael Jordan who have come along, but I gotta believe, you know, if the Bulls would come out and play and be that flat when he was in his prime, he'd be over on the bench, you know, literally kicking guys in the butt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do the Bucks have that kind of player?
Yeah, you don't see it very often. You know, Jason Terry is the main kind of veteran voice on the team, and, you know, he's going around talking to players and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, one of the things he said recently was, you know, where's your mind at? Are you thinking about the playoffs? Are you thinking about vacation? Like, where are you? Like, what do you want to be? Like, where are we going to go? Like, are you locked in? Are you with us? Like, all that type of stuff. But like, if you watch games, I mean, you see the excitement, you see energy, you know, you see dunks and guys letting out, you know, excitement and screams and high-fiving and pointing and, you know, giving love for guys to passing the ball or, you know, giving props to guys who are doing the right thing on defense, and the bench gets all excited about things that are happening, and the bench is engaged by trying to help call out defensive things and all that stuff. Like, you know, they're not, it's not a situation where they're not together. But at the same time, you're not seeing necessarily a player holding other players accountable in a very, aggressive way. So you'll see guys who will shake their heads or will pull guys aside, and they'll be like, hey, you know, on this play, you were doing this, you got to do this, or, you know, I need help, like, how come you're not helping here, or how come you did help and you left that guy open? Like, you see, like, the different, you know, discussions and, you know, things like that, when guys are coming off the court or on the bench or in different situations, they're talking for sure, but you just don't see that. Just that same intensity, like, you know, obviously, like you said, no one's Michael Jordan, no one's doing that, but, you know, but no one's Kobe Bryant, no one's in practice just absolutely, like, destroying people, and with that Mamba mentality and just absolutely, like, hell bent on winning. The guys are competitive, but you just don't see it in the same way, and I've wondered that too. You know, I wonder, you know, of all the guys that they have, of the main players that they have, that's not really in their temperament to do something like that. And as a team, you see, like, okay, like, they're going to the playoffs, they know they still have time, they can still put it together. Like, you almost feel like the urgency isn't there, or like that intensity, that fire isn't there all the time. And I, you know, not being in practice, you know, obviously they don't have very many practices considering their schedule, just kind of like glorified shoot arounds and walkthroughs and things like that. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, behind the scenes who that guy would be, or if they have that guy, or just maybe every team doesn't work that way. I don't know who that would be, you know, on other teams in the league too. And, you know, some of them are playing better than the Bucks, so it's not like that you have to have that type of guy, to be that stabilizing force, or that, you know, guy who just ratchets up the intensity and calls guys out and gets in faces. I know Jabari Parker earlier this season, he mentioned a difference in the coaching styles of Jason Kidd and Joe Prunty, where, you know, Jason was a former player and he would get in your face and he would, you know, push you in that way. Like a player would. He goes, oh, just like anybody else, any other player would, like Chris would, like mentioning Chris Middleton. Or something like that. Whereas Prunty, you know, he's always been a coach, and he approaches it as a coach. He's trying to teach you and build you up and kind of take on this kind of teacher-type role. Not that he's not going to, you know, yell at guys or enforce things, but it's just not always the first thing or whatever. And Jabari made a point at that time of saying, hey, like, neither of them is wrong, neither of them is right. Like, it's just, like, that's their style, and that's how they do things, and that's okay. You know, I thought it was interesting that he mentioned Chris Middleton at that time. You don't look at Chris and think Chris is a, you know, the guy who's going to be, you know, grabbing guys and getting in their faces. Just, you know, usually don't, he usually seems like a more mild-mannered guy than that. But, you know, it's at the point of the season where everyone, if they're going to have success, they need to be keeping each other accountable and pushing each other harder. Because this team, you know, they know they have talent. Everyone knows they have talent. But getting the most out of that talent is something that we haven't seen all season. And now's the time where if you're going to show, you know, how high you can go, you better do it now.
Exactly. And you know, the other part of this equation is we're talking about the current roster and the current players on the court and on the bench, but that's going to change a little bit over the next week or two here as they get, hopefully, you know, Dellavedova and Brogdon back. What happens to Jennings? What happens to the guys they've signed? What happens to the rotations? What happens to the starting lineup even? I mean, how much different is this team going to be, you know, on April 10th, 11th, 12th, and going into the playoffs than it is at the end of March, Matt?
Yeah, hopefully they're all healthy. I mean, that's what you hope for every team. You hope everybody's healthy at playoff time. We know that for some teams that won't be the case. But for the Bucks, you know, we're looking at, I mean, for weeks now, Brogdon's been hoping to get back for early April. He's on the trip, so is Dellavedova. And, the hope, is that, you know, I would assume that, you know, since they've been targeting early April, there's at least a chance that he could come back on Sunday against the Nuggets. That's April 1st. So that would qualify as early April. And so, you know, and I had heard that Dellavedova, obviously he was expected to miss 3 or 4 weeks, with his right ankle sprain. Then he re-aggravated the injury, and the thought was, okay, tack on another about 4 weeks. That's what I heard. And so, you know, when you look at it that way, it's possible that Delly could also be back sometime late on this trip or during this trip, depending on his ankle and if things are continuing to progress and he doesn't suffer any further setbacks. You know, he already went on a trip. The last time the Bucks had a West Coast trip, he was dealing with left knee tendonitis, and he went on that whole trip, but he ended up not playing because he didn't progress at the rate that they were hoping he would. So it's obviously possible for an injured guy to go on a whole trip around the time you think he might come back and still not come back. But, you know, I'm sure the Bucks are hoping that they'll be able to get both of those guys back sooner than later, because obviously Brogdon was, whether he was in the starting lineup or coming off the bench, he was one of their key guys. He was playing some of the most minutes on the team. He was shooting the three ball well. He moved the ball well. You know, he wasn't always in there. When he was in the lineup, his numbers don't suggest that he was always the driving force behind positive defense. But when you watch him play, you see that he obviously you know, takes pride in the defensive end and tries to stop his man at the point of attack as much as he can. You know, and being able to play along Eric Bledsoe, where Bledsoe can take a point guard and Brogdon can take a shooting guard, maybe that will give him the opportunity where, since Bledsoe has more, you know, lateral quickness and general quickness, that he can take the quicker, you know, guards and Brogdon can match up against, you know, more twos and maybe have a better opportunity to use his size to his advantage, or at least match up size-wise. You know, but it'll be really interesting to see just how he can fit back in, because as people will remember, he got hurt the night before Jabari Parker came back. So he hasn't played with Jabari yet this season. He hasn't had the opportunity to kind of mesh in with that group. Last week in Cleveland was the first day he actually practiced with Tyler Zeller. The two of them were working together after shoot-around with assistant coach Greg Foster, and that was the first time they ever shared the court, because Zeller was signed the week after Brogdon got hurt. So, you know, he's still working on he'll have to work on some chemistry with guys like Zeller and Brandon Jennings, and if he's still around, and then Jabari Parker. But overall, I mean, once you get to the stretch run of the season and into the playoffs, and if you can have the Bucks put out a lineup that includes Bledsoe, Brogdon, Middleton, Parker, and Giannis, I mean, those are probably their best five-man lineup, or their most potentially explosive five-man lineup. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see what that group can do. I mean, I don't know how much they would use that group. Obviously, that would mean putting Giannis at the five, and that's something that they've done on and off, depending on matchups. Obviously, if you're, you know, going against one of the bigger centers in the league, you might not do that as much. If you're matched up against Cleveland in the first round, maybe you do that more because they play smaller. So it would partially depend on matchup, but, you know, I think fans would be really interested to see if they could use that group or how that group would work, because that gives them, you know, just dynamic playmakers at every spot and guys who are versatile and switchable and, you know, it's really, that's more of a positionless look, that could give teams fits at the right times if the Bucks are getting their shots down. So there's definitely a lot to look forward to if you're the Bucks in terms of getting guys healthy and putting your best foot forward. And I'm sure they're hoping that they can get a couple games in the regular season where they can test things out before they send them out full force in the playoffs. So we'll see when Delly and Brogdon will come back. We'll hope that no players get injured for any teams. And then the Bucks can kind of see who they're going to be and how high they can go from there. One of the interesting things injury-wise, I kind of alluded to it earlier with this West Coast trip, is that they might get the Warriors without two of their All-Stars at least. Steph Curry is going to be out for the rest of the season until the playoffs, and Klay Thompson isn't expected back this week with his own injury. It was a fractured hand or thumb. I'd have to look, but it's a fracture on his hand. And then Kevin Durant, you know, he might not be available. I remember on March 15th, he was expected to be out 2 weeks with a fractured right rib. And they play on March 29th. And so I think they play the 28th. Now I have to look it up. But I think it's the...
Golden State you're talking about?
Yeah.
They play the 29th. Yeah.
Right. So it's possible he could be back for that game. But it's still unclear if he would be cleared and all that stuff. So, you know, the Warriors with Durant and Draymond Green and the rest of their supporting cast would still be a tough out, but not as tough as having to play that group plus Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. So, you know, the Bucks, that could present an opportunity for the Bucks, where obviously you don't want anybody to be injured, but if they're going to be injured, you know, you see what you can do against that unit, and maybe you can steal a win that you might not be expected to get, which in stealing a win gives you, you know, a little bit of a boost in those in that playoff race.
One more personnel question, because if they will get Brogdon and Dellavedova back pretty quickly here, what happens to Brandon Jennings? I really liked what he's done. I think his game is really a lot more mature than it was the first time around with the Bucks. He's unselfish. He's, obviously still learning a little bit the defensive sets and everything, but I think he's given them some really positive minutes off the bench. And, you know, do they hang on to him, or what happens to him because they're going to have a glut of guards when those guys come back?
Yeah, I believe his last day of his 10-day contract would be March 30th, if I'm counting correctly, which means that he would be able to be there for the first three games of the West Coast trip. But then they'd have to decide the next day what to do with him, because he can only sign a guy to two 10-day contracts, and then you'd have to sign him for the rest of the season. He would, if he were to be signed for the rest of the season, he would be eligible to play in the playoffs, as far as I've been told. The tough part is that if Dellavedova and Brogdon are not yet back by that point, by March 30th, I feel like and Jennings is still playing well and meshing well and adding a boost off the bench. I feel like it'd be hard to let him go, because until those guys are back and until they've proven they can play consistent game minutes, not just, you know, performing well in practices and tests in the weight room and stuff like that, you need to have that security blanket. You need to have somebody where you can say, okay, you know, we haven't fully confirmed that these guys are back for us yet, you know, so you can't just go into it with Bledsoe as your only point guard and kind of leave things to chance. I think that'd be kind of dangerous. I don't know who would be available for them to sign if they did not stick with Jennings. They'd have to find somebody else who was on the free agent market to bring in somebody who probably has little to no experience with this group or with this franchise, which seems dicey. For now, I think you leave that spot open. And of course, if anyone gets injured between now and then, you know, that could change things. You know, if a big man gets hurt, you know, do the Bucks then say, all right, well, you know, Brandon, you've been great, but right now our need is to add another big man. You know, we need to have a third, you know, you don't know. You don't want to go into it where, you know, you might feel like there's a position that is lacking in depth. And granted, you don't play the same number of players you do in a playoff series. You're not going to play everybody. You're not going to go 10, 12 deep in a rotation. It's just not going to happen. You might go 7, 8, 9 deep in a game. But, you know, you always want to be prepared for each possibility. So it all really depends on what the roster looks like. But I would guess, and this is just my own personal guess, that if everyone remains healthy and Brogdon and Delly are still on track, that I think that they would keep Brandon. I think that they would, he's obviously been with the team. He has proven he can give a spark. He can run the team well, play with pace, really share the ball and get guys in good open positions and just give a jolt. So even if he plays, just for a few minutes in a playoffs here, in a playoff game, that could be a 5-7 minute stretch where, they really can change the way they play and he can affect the game in a positive way, while not being asked to do, everything he's been asked to do at certain times, whether it's, playing most of the game or a lot of the game against Memphis and nearly putting up a triple-double, or, against Chicago when Bledsoe got into early foul trouble and he had to play the bulk of the first half and run the team. He might not be asked to do those things, but if he can come in off the bench and be stable and kind of, especially on defense, if he can hold his own on defense and run the team well on offense and get guys open and create for himself and others, then there's definitely a benefit there, especially having been around the team and knowing the system.
Right. And let's see, 2:53 p.m., Matt, what time does your flight leave tonight?
Like 7:05.
Okay, so you got a little time. We should probably wrap up, though. Is anything we missed?
No, I think that's it for now. I gotta finish packing and, get everything squared away here on the home front and get ready to be gone for a week.
Yeah, it was good seeing you at the Spurs game, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. I guess I'll be at the Masters the first week of April, so I won't be back until that 11th game when they're on the road against Philly, so I guess I'll see you in the playoffs next, I guess, man, is what I'm saying.
All right, that sounds good. Maybe we'll have another podcast together through the magic of the internet before that. But otherwise, I look forward to seeing you in the playoffs and hope to have the rest of you who are listening with us as well. As always, you can find all of our work at jsonline.com. You can also find our podcast either by subscribing on iTunes, or Stitcher, Google Play, basically anywhere you get podcasts. You can also find them on JS Online and on our Audio Boom page. But until then, we thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.